It's time for Caffeinated Comics, a lively discussion and debate on comics, film, television, and collectibles, all fueled by the magic of Frappuccinos. Caffeinated Comics is sponsored by Chimeras Comics. Chimeras is your one stop for comic books, graphic novels, hero clicks, Magic the Gathering, and more. Explore the fantastic at Chimeras Comics. And now, here's your hosts, John and Steven.
Hey, this is Caffeinated Comics. I'm your host, John Clark. With me is 97% always is my co-host,
Steven Brown.
And Elliot Serrano is back today.
I never left. I've just been hiding under your...
He's been in the corner.
Yeah.
Been slowly losing weight because no one is feeding him.
Yeah.
Pretty.
But and Marco Garcia is here for the first time.
Thank you. Welcome me.
Yes.
All right. Welcome. Do you have any more orders? Get
Neil,
me a soda.
Before Zod.
But we have a full house today because this is one of the big movies. This is Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, which I was just having a discussion with my wife this morning. Maybe the biggest movie of the year. Certainly Marvel thinks it's going to be a bigger movie than Spider-Man because it got the May date and not the July date.
I thought that was weird as well, that even Free Comic Book, they started with the first release of the Spider-Man movie, the Sony
right.
one. So I figured they would have just like out of like tradition or whatever.
And the first week in May has always been the big Marvel movie. It used to be Memorial Day because like all the Star Wars, Indiana Jones, everything came out like around the 25th.
Yeah.
And Spider-Man came out that first weekend in May. And then it's been like Iron Man came out that first weekend in May. Avengers came out that first weekend in May.
Right.
I believe Thor did. So it's always been a Marvel weekend, but that to me proved before I saw it that they're putting they think 2017 is all about Guardians of the Galaxy. I mean, Thor is going to be a Christmas movie.
Yeah.
But you're right, Spider-Man, the last two Spider-Mans were July, but they were the Andrew Garfield ones, and even Sony didn't have confidence in those.
Right.
So, yeah, it
maybe it's despite Sony. Maybe because they're so petty.
I think Sony had to agree on the date, if not set it themselves. So it's interesting. But that being said, all the pressure has been put on this film to be it for Marvel, if not the year. I can't think of too many other films that are coming out that can compete. I mean, DC's got Wonder Woman this summer. There's a fifth Pirate of the Caribbean. I can't think of anything else that anybody has that's seriously going to challenge it.
Justice League. I mean, isn't Justice League
supposed
to be this
thing? Isn't it?
Yeah, well, right before, it says Last Jedi is Christmas.
Right. Well, this Christmas will be Last Jedi, Thor, Ragnarok.
Ragnarok
and
is...
Justice League.
Yeah.
So I think in terms of the summer is always your tentpole. Summer always does better than Christmas, if nothing else, because you get ticket sales in January, which no longer count for the year.
Right.
So I think, yeah, I think this is the big one.
But isn't this like this is the start of this blockbuster season.
Right.
So it's like there's going to be huge other movies this year.
Right. But the first out of the gate, there's another Planet of the Apes.
Yeah.
But the first out of the gate is usually the biggest one.
Right.
So, and they said it's on track to do really, really well.
But 150 million.
Domestic, right?
Yeah.
And it's already and then done 100, over 100 foreign.
And then, and it's already done bigger in overseas. They say the first one wasn't even released in Korea, and this one was released in Korea, and it's done huge.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, they're already saying this one's been big.
We were listening to the soundtrack. There's a really good Spotify playlist which combines both movies together. We were listening to it today, and it drove home how much more they thought of this movie than the first one, because My Sweet Lord started playing, and my wife was like, they got George Harrison in this movie? It was like, yeah. First movie's all one-hit wonders.
Yeah.
This movie has like ELO, Fleetwood Mac, George Harrison. They paid a lot more for music this time around.
Yeah, that's what we were talking about at the store after we saw it with Tina and Lisa on Saturday, one time during Free Comic Book Day. And what they must have paid for songs alone has to be fortune.
My wife brought that up. Licensing a Harrison song has to be really expensive.
Yeah.
And I thought that's why they licensed... these one-hit wonders on the first soundtrack,
but
because it had to be cheaper, I thought.
Yeah, like, they must be.
They're trying to get as much bang for the buck as possible, but it's a great soundtrack, the second one. And you can buy a bag of Doritos with a player built in, with a jack, and you can play Volume 2 soundtrack as well.
Wait, hold on. What?
Wait, what?
That's what I heard yesterday.
What?
Is it all MP3s of crinkling and crunching sounds?
Yeah. Okay, hold on.
Get past the crinkling.
Before we go on to the Doritos, y'all forget, there was a Michael Jackson song on that first soundtrack.
Jackson 5.
That was a Jackson 5. Those were not cheap. I even remember when they play that song at the end of the first Guardians, I'm like, oh, that must have cost them something. So,
Here's a question that I believe none of us can answer. Are Michael Jackson songs more expensive than Jackson 5 songs?
You know, that's actually a good question, because remember, the Jackson doesn't even own the rights to those songs. Somebody else has them. Kind of like Michael Jackson, the Jackson Estate owns the Beatles. Right. Yeah. The Beatles own them. So, yeah, it would be interesting to find out. I'm guessing the Jackson 5 songs are a bit cheaper.
I'm guessing that too.
Yeah.
What was the Jackson 5 song? I don't remember.
I Want You Back is in the first movie.
Oh, baby, give me one more chance.
Yeah, just like that.
Yeah, now we have to license it. Yeah. Thanks, Elliot.
Sorry.
Elliot just tanked the podcast in 3 seconds.
There's $750,000 I'll never see again.
Just bleep
me out. I was going to buy a Jack Kirby Artist Edition. I don't know why my cheap guy comes from the Bronx, but he does.
So a Doritos bag that you can play?
Apparently there is a tie-in, one of many, where you buy a bag of Doritos and it's got some kind of chip or a...
All right, I'm going, after I leave here,
Doritos.
I'm going to Mariano's.
It's got a jack inside, and it links to I think it's a Spotify playlist.
All right, I'm going to Mariano's to find me some Doritos.
Yeah, although speaking of expensive movies, and I know this is why you listen to the podcast, you saw Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 went, how much did those songs cost? And you want to hear an hour of that. But there is no one more expensive to license than Led Zeppelin.
Yes.
And that's all over the Thor trailer.
Yeah. That's just because Marvel's got all those Disney dollars now. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. It's like they've got the money. They're flaunting
it. They also know they're going to make it back.
Well, did you hear...
They're like, Jimmy Page wants how much? Ah, that's a Sunday in Toledo.
Yeah. But that's what I'm saying. We were talking about this at the shop the other day, me and Marco. The budget for the two next Avengers movies is $1 billion.
Between the two of them?
Between the two of them. Yeah. 400 million of which is in cast and like producers and talent alone.
Yeah.
Before they even start filming a thing, there are 400 million in the hole.
It's because they put everybody in it. And then people at conventions are like, is Daredevil going to be in it?
Yeah.
And Kevin Feige's like, you don't have enough guys in this. You got to.
So there's like 64 major characters.
Like, do I need to put Quake in it now? Is that what you're saying to me?
When you consider that Civil War made $1 billion. Mm-hmm. That, you know, you can't. That's like.
Well, they said Marvel Studios has made $10 billion between all their different movies. God. So that's 10% of their gross reinvested back into their arguably biggest.
But they know they were expecting this because when everyone signs those deals at the beginning, like Robert Downey Jr. was paid practically. Well, I think it was one of the lowest.
He made less than Terrence Howard on Iron Man.
He was the highest paid guy. And then for the second one, Terrence wanted to be the highest paid guy still.
Yeah.
And that's why we got Don Cheadle.
Exactly.
And that's why we got Don Cheadle.
And I always say about Lawrence Taylor, is like, I don't know what the numbers were, but if the studio can go, we'll get Don Cheadle instead, you wanted a lot of money.
Yeah.
Because Don Cheadle has had a better career than Lawrence Taylor before and after.
What was his name?
Terrence Howard.
Terrence Howard.
Yeah. I always think his name is Lawrence Taylor. I've done that multiple times.
Yeah. Different industries.
But I mean, you know, it's not like Terrence Howard isn't doing okay for himself.
No, he's on Empire.
Yeah,
he's on
Empire
money.
Show. Yeah.
But he had a couple of years in between those two.
Little years.
Apparently, he's like a crazy person, too. If you ever like read or hear interviews from him, he has some very... He's like Neil Adams out there. You know what I mean? He has like strange ideas about things.
Well, it was rumored that he and Robert Downey didn't get along.
Just like Robert Downey didn't get along with his director, too. You know.
Who? Favreau?
Which one? Favreau.
Really? Yeah. He was one of... Ultimately, after the second one, there's like, that's why he didn't do a third.
Wow.
Well, Favreau was
happy. I haven't heard that.
That's crazy, because I thought Favreau was like begging the studios to let him use Robert Downey Jr.
He did.
Yeah.
He did.
Well, and Favreau came back at least to play Happy in the third Iron Man.
Right.
Even though he didn't direct it. But, you know, Marvel has a bad track record with repeating directors. Up until now.
Yeah.
Which I think is a big deal because, you know, they chased off Jon Favreau after two of them. They chased off Joss Whedon after two of them. They chased off after one of them. They chased off Edgar Wright before he made one.
Right. Yeah. Is that because they're hard to work with and the directors want to just leave?
It seems to be because they're a producer-driven entity. They're more like a television enterprise than a film enterprise. Because in a movie, the director has all the power. And I think we can all agree that if you walk into Marvel Studios, you're not going to have final say on stuff.
Yeah.
So when I look at it, there have really been three major directors in all of Marvel. There was Jon Favreau, who set the template, because everything after Iron Man is kind of in that mold.
Yeah, Doctor Strange is the same movie as Iron
right.
Man.
You and know Hulk, what I mean? And Hulk is nothing like any other Marvel movie because it's not following Iron Man's in footsteps because it came out at the same time.
Right.
And then you have Joss Whedon, who is the first guy to go, this is how they all work together and it doesn't become overwhelming, which they've done again and again and again. And now you have James Gunn, who after two movies is, I think, the director out of everyone who's like, this is my film, this is the way I'm doing it, but it lives in Marvel so comfortably.
And he signed on to do a third Guardians already.
Yeah.
And it's like, so whatever he's doing, and I think it's because the Guardians, this isn't like any comic, really. It's loosely based off that Abnett Landing run from like 2000 and early 2000, whatever. But it's like, it just seems like they're just kind of let him, hey, do more of the same. You know, right. I think Guardians was kind of like an unexpected hit for them, I think. And I think they were just like, all right, James Gunn, do the same thing you did, but here's more money. Make us more money.
Right, and there, it was not a single character in either film resembles the comic much at all. And to be fair, the other films are all loose adaptations. We had a Civil War movie that didn't repeat any of the plot of the Civil War comic book. You know, we had Brubaker's Winter Soldier story, which didn't repeat those beats. They take the characters, they take the scenarios, and then they go where they want with them.
Yeah.
But, like, there's not a single character in these movies who is even like the Abnett Landing run, much like the classic 70s run of Guardians of the Galaxy.
Right.
This is James Gunn's universe, and he's figured out a way that it lives comfortably in the rest of the Marvel universe.
Yeah.
And don't the books now follow?
Yeah, now
like,
the
for
books.
For instance, the books resemble Star-Lord as kind of a himbo.
Right, yeah, way, no, whereas... but it's the same thing with Iron Man. That's the problem with the movies, is they basically take the same... They take the reverse approach. The comics are initially based on the movies, then the movies do something different, and then the movies then influence what the comics do. So now everyone writes Tony Stark like Robert Downey Jr., where if you read Iron Man comics from the 90s or the 70s or any time before Robert Downey Jr. was cast, it's a very different character, you know?
Right, but it makes sense, because Tony Stark is sort of a flat character. He was mostly,
totally,
just a serious businessman who would, you know, run over his friends when he needed to. That was kind of it for the character. He certainly wasn't Peter Parker.
Right, there wasn't any real depth to that character. You know, yeah, Marvel did pack in more to the what goes on with the secret identity more than like DC ever did, but it wasn't anywhere to extent fleshed out like Robert Downey Jr. did. Right. And that's an instance where I think it works really well.
Right, and then you're judging a book that 300,000 people have seen versus a movie that 100 million people have seen.
Right.
And Marvel's always hoping that... 10%. 1 million of those people going into a comic shop and buying it would, you know, explode the business at this point.
Yeah.
1 million was the cap at the peak. I mean, Jim Lee's X-Men number one sold 1 million. Todd McFarlane's Spider-Man sold 1 million. So it makes sense to map towards the movie as much as possible. And you're right. When Bendis took over Guardians of the Galaxy, he's like, nah, we're just going to do the movie.
Yeah.
I remember when Mark Waid took over Hulk, he did Signing It All, and I was at the time, and I was talking to him about it. And I said, well, what's your take on the Hulk? He's like, I'm doing Mark Ruffalo. He's like, that's a new way to do it, and it's a great way to do it. That's the way I'm going to do it. So there's a guy who's been at Marvel for decades who looks at a movie and goes, yeah, we're doing that now.
Right. It makes sense.
Yeah.
Looking at the directors, would you have ever thought that the guys that would get the chance to do a trilogy of the movies would be James Gunn and the Russo brothers?
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
You know?
And both of those guys, the Russo brothers and James Gunn, all, as Marvel does, is they grab these guys when they do, you know, all right, Community, this hit show that kind of was walking a tightrope between, like, cancellation and obscurity, and then boom, those guys are huge.
And with Ike Perlmutter in charge, they're getting guys when they're cheap.
Yeah.
And that tends to be a lot of the fights they have later, is that Marvel turns directors and actors into A-list.
Yeah. Grab Chris Pratt out of a random TV show and boom, that dude was in like three major movies.
Where he is like billed seventh on that TV show.
Yeah.
You know, he's not even Amy Poehler on Parks and Rec.
Downey
He's
was
not
living,
a C's on Parks and Rec.
Robert Downey was living, supposedly, he was quoted as saying he was living comfortably, but it was on a budget.
Yeah.
Before.
Yeah. Well, he was an indie actor. I mean, well, he completely destroyed his career in the late 90s. I mean, he did Jail Time, but he was an indie actor. He was like billed fourth in Zodiac. That was about as big as he got. And he did a lot of like little small things like Scanner Darkly.
Yeah.
And he was always really good in them. And that's why.
Good. Yeah.
And that's why Favreau went to bat. And the conversation where that Favreau swayed Marvel is like, look, Tony Stark is an alcoholic who's made some big mistakes. Robert Downey Jr. is a guy to
yeah,
do
he's
that.
Literally been prepping for this role for decades.
Yeah, and now there's nobody as big. And you get to the point where these guys are too big to stay there. Where, you know, after Avengers 4, Downey's contract is up. Evans' contract is up. Hemsworth's contract is up. They could never keep Samuel L. Jackson. Mm. You know, he's been basically a cameo in everything but Avengers. So what they're trying to do is build up Paul Rudd, build up Benedict Cumberbatch, build up Chris Pratt, and then you have a second generation coming in, and Marvel has thousands of characters. So what they keep hoping is that Doctor Strange will be as popular as Iron Man was. And then you can just, like, because Avengers changes that lineup all the time, okay, here's the next lineup of Avengers.
Yeah, here's Captain.
They have a baked-in minor league system, if you will. Like, there's all these interesting characters they could bring to the screen. Hopefully they do, like...
Well,
Miss Marvel,
like,
for
they
instance,
keep introducing new characters. So the Guardians did it in this movie, and this is, I guess, where we'll get into, like, spoilers. They introduced Mantis. Now she's on the team. They boosted Nebula. She's on the team now. It's like they're taking a bunch of guys, and they're going to elevate them to a second team. You know, spoilers, they kill off Yondu, and now Sylvester Stallone is going to be, like, the old rugged... running around.
All right,
Guardian.
Let's get into this. Let's get into the movie now. Usually I go around and ask if people liked it, but you've already gone into like three things of the movie. Sylvester Stallone.
Yeah.
Why?
Starhawk.
Why?
That's his name?
Why not?
Starhawk? I think he's great.
Isn't it Starhawk, right?
No, Starhawk was
the
Ravager.
I think he is Starhawk because he has those those flared
the one
shoulder
knows?
Collars. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. I think he's great in this. I'm not a big Stallone fan.
Yeah, me neither.
Like, I have no Stallone DVDs in my house at all. There's no Rockies. There's no Rambos. But, you know, I thought he'd been doing great on Expendables. Creed was good. But in terms of the story, what the hell does Stallone do?
Yeah, I don't think
he yells at
somebody.
Yondu. Then in one of the... bonus scenes, he puts together a team of people I do not recognize.
Those, I think, are the classic Guardians.
Well, that's the crystal guy.
That's Martin X.
Martin X, right.
Okay.
And then they cut to, like, three different ships. One of the ships had Charlie 27 as the guy. He was, like, a huge black dude with, like, bandoliers.
That was
Mike
Clark
Duncan.
Was that Michael?
No, that was the...
I think Michael Clark Duncan
Clark
died.
Duncan's dead. That was...
Oh, that's Ving Rhames?
Ving Rhames, yes.
Okay. Because Michael Clark Duncan was Kingpin in the Affleck Daredevil.
Yeah, I think he passed away.
He died.
Oh, did he?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
But I'm saying, so I think that was, like, all homage stuff. But it
and
seemed...
who was Michelle Yeoh's character?
Who?
Michelle Yeoh?
Was she, did she have
Asian,
red hair?
She was the, there was a, like, I think it was a cut to three women on a bridge.
Yeah.
One of them is Michelle Yeoh.
Yeah. I had no idea.
See, she's going to be one of the characters in the new Star Trek show.
You know what we need? Joe Pakovitz would be able to tell us exactly who all these fucking characters
he
are.
He is walking past the house right now.
Say his name two more times. He'll appear.
We ran out of the studio when we asked him on the street, but he has not seen Guardians 2 yet.
Yeah, so but anyway, so I think all those different cutscenes had different obscure past members of the Guardians of the Galaxy. And like Vast Astrovik was like the time lost guy that was Justice in the 90s, Perez Avengers.
Was he in it?
I don't know if he was, but I'm saying like...
I was looking for Vast Astrovik.
There's a Vast Astrovik figure in the last set of Guardians Marvel Legends.
Right, that's what I'm saying. It's like they're still playing with those characters still. So that's what I was kind of looking for.
Who was the crimson guy with the holograms?
That's what I was asking. We didn't know that either. Stu claims he was one of the characters, but I've never read the book.
Stu knows the cosmic stuff.
That's what I'm saying. He knows a lot more of that
stuff. Stu knows cosmic stuff and D-list Marvel better than anyone.
But he's encyclopedic about it.
I know. His favorite character is Darkhawk.
So dumb.
Like,
yes.
His favorite character is Darkhawk to the point where Joe and I went to one of those little conventions out in the west suburbs. And a dealer sold me Darkhawk, and I walked into the store to show him, and he's like, I bought it already. Will you sell me that one?
Yeah, he wanted more than one.
He did. I bought him again, and I eventually ended up getting Darkhawk for like on sale on Amazon. So I do have another one, but I was like, yeah, I don't care about Darkhawk.
We play Destiny. It's like an online Halo shooting game with Stu and all the other idiots from the store. And we play online with Dave Johnson and Mark Brooks. So Mark Brooks is doing the covers for Secret Empire right now, and Dave Johnson's the guy that did Superman Red Sun.
And they're both not on the podcast because?
They both live in Atlanta. I could ask them.
Skype.
We'll see. But they, both of them, he pesters them constantly about putting Darkhawk in their comics. It's like, it's so embarrassing to play a fucking video game with this guy who's constantly all about Darkhawk. And, like, they're like, wait, who's Darkhawk? Like, no one has any idea who this fucking character is except Stu.
It's horrible. Darkhawk was such a bomb character that in issue 6 they threw Venom in there for no reason.
John.
This was at a point where Venom was only in Spider-Man like once a year. Like Larson was still drawing Spider-Man.
He had over 25 issues of his own comic in the 90s.
Yeah, I had number one.
Yeah, but in the 90s, that counts for nothing. In the 90s, if you had less than 60 issues,
right, you were a failure.
You failed. Now it's if you get more than 7, you're a hit.
The message with those teams is to let the fan, is it fan service or no? We're bringing there is an original lineup coming.
This movie seemed a lot of fan service in this movie.
See, I don't know. I disagree because the thing that struck me most about this movie is that it did not do anything to push the Marvel Universe forward.
Right.
It was completely a self-contained. It was a sequel to itself.
Which let's.
But I mean, there were 5 bonus scenes, and not one of them talked about Thanos.
And that's what I'm saying. I think this is good. This is a good thing, I think, because these movies can't be stepping stones to the next movie. They need to be their own, like, standalone, enjoyable thing. You don't have to see, I don't know if you even need to see another Marvel movie to get this movie. I think you could just watch this.
You just needed to know that Gamora's sister. That's all you really needed to know with this one.
Right.
But they say pretty explicitly, they're like, we're sisters and we hate each other because Thanos was mean to both of us. Yeah.
Yeah. You didn't really need to know anything about what happened in the first one, I guess, other than Peter's mom was
died.
Died of cancer.
But I mean, it's all explained very well in the dialogue.
It's very self-contained.
It's very much a typical type of sequel where it's like, we think you've seen the first movie, but in case you didn't, we can catch you up. They didn't have to do a prologue. They didn't have they didn't have to do flashbacks of footage from the last movie. They told a story that had a beginning, middle, and an end. And the characters had evolved from the first film, but that was it. And I found that really refreshing in a Marvel movie.
You articulated something I was struggling with, and I saw the movie twice this weekend. It feels like an episode of a, because it's so self-contained. And in a way, I felt like I did towards Star Trek Beyond from last year. It's a good movie. Didn't have anything wrong with it to me per se, but it was too self-contained. And I don't know if it helped or hurt the movie this time around by being so self-contained, because it felt like the stakes were much smaller, even though they make it clear,
this
dude is gonna take over the whole galaxy. But because it didn't move forward the whole Marvel universe narrative, we didn't get any closer to Thanos or moving who's got the last 2 missing stones. I guess there's 2 left. It just felt much smaller. But having said that, it's really not about, I walked away thinking it's a deconstruction of a sequel. I think it was way more focused on the relationships. It was character driven, and I walked away loving it for that, because instead of having this big giant bombastic battle like you did at the end of the first one, it's really focused more on the team helping themselves because they're family, and it's really the 2 main arcs are not what you would have expected from a massive tentpole sequel like this. You know, I don't want to, I just to touch on Yondu and Peter, it's like, this is not what I was expecting, but I loved it because of
it. Yeah, I guess that really did kind of catch me off guard that they went in that different direction was with those 2 characters specifically. I was not expecting, this was like a pleasant surprise movie. I don't know what I expected this movie to be, but it wasn't anything like I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, I'm glad you touched on the self-contained nature of it, because I had that same thought.
Yeah, I felt like that in the opening credit sequence, which is fantastic.
Of
like, it's just, it's all one shot that just stays with Baby Groot while like all of this action is happening. And that was the moment I thought, James Gunn loves these characters and he knows that I do too. And it's like, you know, you always have that scene in the beginning of the first act that shows this is what the heroes do well, you know, and blatantly it's usually like they capture a minor villain before the story.
Right.
So they're like trying to stop a minor giant alien. But everybody just had even more than a moment. It was just a tone that ran through it. And that's when I started to think, oh, he gets to do whatever he wants with these are his characters.
A lot of not a lot of maybe notes from the studio, like perhaps the first one did. Like he was really let loose.
Yeah, and that's what I've heard is that he's one of the few directors that's really creatively happy, and they kind of want to make him the next Joss Whedon. Of like they said he's very involved in Avengers 3 and 4.
Really?
Yeah, at least in terms of like his characters and how they're dealt with. I think he's either a consultant or a producer. He's not writing it. He's not directing it.
Yeah.
But he's there.
We were talking about in Thor Ragnarok how the colors.
Oh, yeah.
Like his pastiche, I think, is going to permeate at least maybe the cosmic side
of the cinematic universe. Stuff is following his lead.
Oh, yeah.
Lead.
There's this whole retro
looks like Guardians of the Galaxy.
It really does.
And I love that trailer. And you touched on the Zeppelin song in that trailer. That just
could be one of
my favorite Marvel trailers to date.
They showed that trailer yesterday, and then I took Ben yesterday, and we were talking about like what movies we're most excited about seeing, and I was saying, oh, I can't wait to see Spider-Man, and he's like, I want to see Thor.
Yeah.
And he doesn't care about Thor. I don't know that he's finished. No, I did take him to Dark World, so I know he's finished it once. But I, like, Dark World is a movie that I thought was fine when I saw it, and then I bought the Blu-ray and never finished it again.
Wow.
And Thor is like that. Like, the middle of Thor is great, and the beginning and the end of it is like, ugh. But that trailer alone
looks
like,
amazing.
Yeah, like I said, my son is like wants to see that more than anything else in 2017.
That's awesome.
That's
Thor's really getting his due.
Yeah,
finally.
Well, to me, I guess the one thing I'm reflecting on here, what you guys are saying as far as how Guardians have really seemed to move the whole Marvel universe forward, but I'm like, isn't that the biggest criticism of the comic books right now, that everything's a big crossover and everything has to relate to everything else and people are getting burned out on that?
Yeah.
So it's like, hey, you have a movie where you don't have to know everything else that's been going on in the Marvel universe so you can enjoy it. It just seems to be the movie folks are doing stuff that the comic folks probably need to pay more attention to.
Right. Or the comics folks need to do less of it.
I agree.
It's overwhelming. It's hard. It's borderline unaffordable.
They're already advertising. Secret Empire just started, and they're already advertising the event after Secret Empire, the legacy. And it's like that level of lunacy is they're out of their minds. You know, it's like because we're just coming off Monsters Unleashed, and that's just coming off on Pleasantville or whatever the standoff.
Oh, the COVID story.
They did the Inhumans versus the X-Men crossover. It's like one after the other, after the other, the after. But I think what might be nice is if the movies, to your point, Elliot, are getting away from that, and we did get a really nice self-contained Guardian story, you know, after they beat Thanos and this whole cosmic roadmap thing that they're leading us towards is over, maybe we will just go to Doctor Strange, you know, 2 and 3 and 4 are him doing his own thing, and then... Yes. Well, years go by before we do these big crossover
movies. The one thing
movies.
We know we're going to get after Avengers 4 now is Guardians 3.
Yeah. And is that the only movie we know after Avengers?
Yeah, because we're getting Captain Marvel before.
Captain Marvel the origin is in it, the first Avengers movie, the next Avengers movie, I should say. And then that's when her origin
is. But she's between 3 and 4, isn't
she? Her movie is in between.
And then we're also getting Ant-Man and the Wasp, but I don't know when that's scheduled.
I think that's also between 3
and
4.
And now Inhumans has become
a show.
The next ABC show, which I believe is designed to replace Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. because Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has not done well lately.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I heard it's going to get renewed for one more season. And that's
season
it.
Season finale.
Yep. That's 5 years. That's decent.
5 years is a good run.
Yeah.
And it's not a bad show. I don't know if you guys like the show. Are you guys keep up with it?
I watch it while I'm doing something else because I feel like their big story arcs are good, but each individual episode is boring.
Yeah. It's too long. These 24 episode seasons are
crazy.
I'm totally on the boat on that. Steve, you've mentioned to me before you don't like with Arrow
or Flash.
Like, we need to do these
13 episodes. You do more than that, you lose me. Unless you're Game of Thrones or something.
Yeah, unless your writing is that great.
Yeah. You know what? I was watching. Speaking of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., I'm trying to get through. I've never watched The West Wing, and I won't derail this into like a political podcast, but because politics are like so horrifying right now, it's just like a warm blanket for me. It's this show of like this wet dream of a liberal president.
I was just reading an article about Veep, which I adore.
Veep is awesome.
It's incredible. It is the best thing next to Curb Your Enthusiasm that has ever come out of anybody that's been involved with Seinfeld.
Yeah.
But they were saying like how hard it is to do this season where they're like, what's happening in reality is way broader than anything they're writing in their own episodes.
I made a joke a couple months ago when he got elected, was like, well, House of Cards is fucked. Because, like, how is that show going to stay on the air when in the first 100 days they've given us more material than five seasons
House of Cards
that
has
show.
Become the West Wing.
Yeah, it really has. But
like,
anyway.
I wish Kevin Spacey was the president. He only pushed one girl in front of a train.
But on the West Wing, they have a meeting. One of the characters meets with an FBI agent, and it was fucking Phil Coulson. It was
that's great.
The guy who plays him, I don't know his name. Yep. And it's like, Clark Gregg. This is like what he was doing before he was in S.H.I.E.L.D. He was like an FBI guy.
He was on, to bring it back to Veep, he was like Julia Louis-Dreyfus's ex-husband on
That's awesome.
The New Adventures of Old Christine, which was a show that ran forever and no one watched it.
Yeah.
Like I think it ran six or seven seasons.
Yeah, and Julia Louis-Dreyfus won countless Emmys for that show too.
And no one ever watched it. It's like Veep has gotten so much more notice than that one. Yeah, she's worked steadily. Like she's had three shows since the end of Seinfeld.
Yeah,
but going back to what you were saying about crossovers being a problem with comics, that's been the main criticism I've seen in the mainstream media about the Marvel movies now. This is just a trailer for the next one I have to see. So that was another reason I thought it was so good that we had a story. And like as much as I love the Marvel movies and they have not made a bad one yet, I can't say that about every movie. Like a lot of movies, I don't get a story that has a beginning, middle, and an end. And I don't get to stick with these characters and see where they go. And that's exactly what I got. And I think that's my favorite thing about this movie.
Yeah, Margot was right that, there was so much character development in this one. I mean, well, okay, let me backtrack. There was more screen time for each character.
Sure, yeah.
And things were said that could be interpreted as character development. If I took one issue with the movie, one, Drax is essentially the same character as he was in the first movie. There's like the needle moved very little on him, which is fine. I mean, the character is great, right?
Yeah, I would say he had a big character arc in the first one.
Right.
And now he's settled into who he is at the end of the first one.
And then the Nebula Gamora thing is like, they turn, yes, we have a scene where Gamora is a real badass, but now it's like, oh, well, I hated you. But all I ever wanted was a sister. And they're going, okay, really? All right.
Yeah, you got a good point.
I get that.
I think I'm equating screen time with development a bit. Sure.
But there
are moments. Everyone's got a moment that just either made me laugh out loud or be like, that's awesome.
Although
I agree.
I think Gamora's arc really is just Nebula's arc, and she's there for her to bounce off of. But when I saw how much Nebula had to do, I was like, okay, that's why if you're Karen Gillan and you come off Doctor Who, you shave your head to have two lines and a scene and a half in Guardians of the Galaxy 1.
Right.
Because she fixes her hand, sits there when Thanos is there, and she has one fight with Gamora, and that's it for her in the whole movie. And then it was this crazy thing because, Terminator Genisys came out at the same time, and Matt Smith has shaved his head for it. And also got almost nothing to do in that film.
Yeah,
and he was promoted heavily in the advertising.
He was,
Bryan Cranston in Godzilla.
Yeah,
they lied to us.
Well, Genisys,
that was just a flat out lie.
Genisys is terrible, and what makes me feel really sad about Genisys is it's the only Terminator movie that's PG-13. The rest of them were all R. So when it came out, I guess on Netflix, I pulled Ben in, and I'm like, oh, you've never seen Terminator. You can watch this one. It's PG-13. And he's like, this is awful. I was like, yes, it is.
Yes.
I was like, but all the R ones are great. And we'll talk about it in your junior year of high school.
Well, when you're older.
Yeah.
Wait, Terminator T2 Judgment Day is R-rated?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
In fact, my dad had to take me, and I think I was like graduating high school when we saw T2.
I saw T2 on TV when I was like 7.
I'm trying to remember. I'm trying to remember outside of some violence. I mean,
I think it's language.
Yeah,
it's the fact that you have a kid like John Connor's constantly cursing in that movie.
Okay,
and he is a douchebag.
He is a little douchebag.
All right. So, because I'm like, I look at that, I'm like, that the R-rated movies of those days are like tame.
Yeah, and I've had this question about what. that's a movie where I feel like, man, maybe I can show it to my 9-year-old because it is pretty tame compared. Like, I showed him Army of Darkness, which there's no reason for that movie to be R. In fact, the documentary on the Blu-ray says the only reason they got an R was because they told the board that it was a sequel to Evil Dead 2.
Oh, okay.
And the studio basically went, all right, that one's R, this one is R. No. Because there's like one F-bomb in the entire movie of Army of Darkness.
I remember him saying assholes.
He says, get the fuck out of my face.
Oh, okay, yeah.
When he comes
right.
back from yeah. not retrieving the book correctly.
Right, yeah.
And that's right. why this movie is in my top 5 movies of all time. Because everyone laughed at that.
yeah.
You're
yeah.
playing another, you got the right crowd.
yeah. Well, it also helps that we have somebody in the room who's written the comic.
Yeah.
Well, I could never work that line. I tried working every line Bruce Campbell used in the Army of Darkness movies and couldn't work that one in.
Yeah.
I did work it into an issue of Homies, though.
That wasn't even an homage. That was organic to the character.
That was organic. Just, yeah, just get the fuck out of my face.
All right, but let's move into the actual plot of this because we've been moving around and I really want to get to some of the heavy things. I really want to talk about Kurt Russell in this movie.
Please.
Yeah, go for it.
Oh, God. I have such a man crush on him. It's.
Did you before or did
before,
this?
Okay. I mean, going back to Escape from New York, back to The Thing. He did a movie with Robert Zemeckis called Used Cars.
Oh, with Robin 80s. Williams, yes.
Was Robin Williams Why in that?
Robin Williams oh, is in that, Oh, my God. Yeah.
I love the guy. And anything, you know, Escape or the Chinatown movie. Comic series.
Big Trouble in Little China.
Yeah, dude. I mean, this is my favorite. These are like my favorite movies. So seeing him, not just in this, but knowing he's in another billion-dollar franchise this summer in the race car movies, the Vin Diesel vehicles.
Fast and the Furious?
Yeah, he's in that too. Yeah. So I'm glad he's working. Totally was stoked to see him in this thing. I love how they brought the Ego, the Living Planet, to life. I don't know if it follows the books in any respect, other than you do get a shot of Ego's face planet-wide.
I was going to say, that was my favorite.
That was awesome. Yeah, that was
awesome. That was ridiculous.
That was the closest thing. The way that, when they said he was playing Ego, I was like, all right, well, you're not really doing Ego. And then they did it!
Yeah, I was really surprised, because me and Stu were talking about it, and we were like, well, if he's going to be Ego the Living Planet, or maybe you and me were talking about this, Mark, he'll just be like the manifestation of the planet. He'll be like a thing the thing builds. But we'll never see the planet with like a beard. And then they did it. It's like, it was fucking awesome. It was like you know why? Because we were conditioned when Fantastic Four came out that you can't do Galactus. You know, it's gonna be a fart cloud in space. And then they changed it and they were like, Marvel does not give a fuck. And that's like this same idea going back to like these producers that don't know what they're doing in like Hollywood or something. Is Marvel was just like, no, his Ego is the giant planet person in space with a face with like a beard. You have to have a planet with a face with a beard. And they went, okay, I just put that in the movie and people will buy it.
Once I got past though the fact that, you know, my guy's up there, I don't know if he's the smart or the strongest aspect of the movie or the plot. I think it is this one of the two centers of the story of the movie. I don't know if the character worked for me. I'd be curious to see what you guys felt. I was way more intrigued or interested in the whole Yondu storyline because there's parallels between fathers looking for redemption and so the emotional core is with Peter's story. It's not necessarily him being funny. They kind of shop that out to everybody else. But I'm glad to see him in it. I'm still kind of trying to figure out if I thought it was strong or not.
Well, see, that to me, I think that also relates to why was Sylvester Stallone in this movie?
Oh, I think there's a love for the 80s from the director.
Yeah, exactly,
he just loves that era.
It's like that. It's like that, again, it's like type of fan service bit.
Yeah.
Where, okay, so you open with young Kurt Russell. You know, it's something
like Escape from New York looking Kurt Russell.
And like, wow, look at that.
They really perfected it because they did Weird Science, Robert Downey Jr. last year.
Yep.
And it was good, but it was like a little waxy.
Yeah.
And not only did the technology get better, but they knew when to give him like sunglasses and when to hide his face because he looked perfect. And the first time I remember this technology being used is X-Men 3, which is terrible.
Yeah.
Oh, when they de-aged Magneto.
Yeah, it just looks like Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen are slathered with Vaseline.
Yeah.
So that technology's come a long way, but like I really stared at young Kurt Russell.
So he's, go on. I'm going to say.
And it was, it not only did it not take me out of the movie the way, say, X-Men 3 did, or where I went, I know what you're doing and I accept it. Because, like, Robert Downey Jr. in Civil War is like Peter Cushing in Rogue One.
Right.
Oh, I see what you're doing. But, yeah, it works for the story and let's go on. Let's move on. It's not bothering me, but,
yeah,
like, that Kurt Russell is the best we've ever seen that technology.
Yeah, well, it's the newest example of it. And it's like,
yeah, and
no matter
it's literally
what...
Escape from New York, Kurt Russell.
Yeah.
Because it's 1980.
Yeah, exactly.
And no one ever gives any love to Kurt Russell's second comeback when he did Executive Decision. Remember?
You beat
Steven Seagal?
You beat me to it.
Yeah, that was a great movie.
Great movie.
And you know, the reason he did that movie, he had retired before that movie. And he visited his daughter, Kate Hudson, on the set of Almost Famous.
Ah.
And he said, wow, you guys are having a great time. And he pulled Cameron Crowe aside and he goes, yeah, you know what? I kind of miss being on a movie set. And he did Executive Decision.
And then he did Breakdown after that. That was a trucker movie. Some good Kurt Russell movies.
He's in Grindhouse. He's one of the best.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He's in Quentin Tarantino's
Hateful Eight.
Death Proof.
Hateful Eight.
He's great in Hateful Eight. Yeah.
But they're just pulling in all the Tron fans, though. If you want, you know, Kurt Russell, you know. Yeah. No, I'm sorry. That's wrong guy. I always confuse him with Jeff Bridges.
Jeff Bridges.
Well, and that's the thing in this. I thought he was fantastic. I thought he was so fantastic in this. And he's playing his age. But then I did start to think, oh, he's, because I was thinking this morning, he's the second best villain that they've ever done in Marvel, because their villains have been weak. And like, people love Tom Hiddleston, but I think he's doing a great performance. But his motivation is like kind of spotty in the movies, so he's not one of my favorites. And I've always said my favorite villain in any of the Marvel movies is Jeff Bridges as Stane, because they set him up to be the mentor character. And honestly, every time I watch that movie, I'm like, I'm thinking, okay, well, they move Stane and they put him in this role. And then when he makes that turn, you never see it coming. And then he's so vicious when he makes that turn. And then I realized, oh, they're doing the same thing with Kurt Russell. And then I thought about the plot. I was like, oh, they just did the same thing with Kurt Russell. He's literally another father figure that betrays his son and tries to kill him.
That's an awesome point. I didn't even make the connection. Yeah. Say it's the same character turn.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because Thane is, is it Thane or Stane?
Stane.
Obadiah Stane, right?
Yeah.
He's so likable as that mentor role, you know, and I was thinking as I was hearing you talk, like when he's having the pizza with Tony and then like a couple scenes later, he's like using that little device to,
I always love when he takes the paper away from Pepper, when you think he's going to discover the USB, and he's like, can I see the paper? And he digs it and he just goes, puzzle.
Puzzle.
Yeah. That's my favorite line. He said, which you know wasn't scripted.
Yeah.
Because that's a dude line.
Yeah.
He just goes, puzzle.
Puzzle. Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. But Kurt Russell's fantastic. And Kurt Russell plays the perfect dick, because every bullshit reason he gives for his backstory of like why he wasn't there, like what he's doing with the planet, what are his plans for the universe, how did he abandon Peter's mother, you kind of buy them.
Yeah.
There's a moment when he recites the lyrics to Brandy.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And he weaves it into the story, the script, as he's explaining.
It's the most I've ever liked that song.
Holy shit, me too. And that was so, I don't know, it was beautiful, you know. It was like, whoever wrote this, James Gunn wrote this, right?
He wrote and directed it. There's no other screenwriters credited for this movie.
Because first one was written by another person, and he came in and like polished it off.
Right? Yeah, Marvel had like a writer's fellowship program.
Yes, that's
I think it was Nicole Perlman.
That's right.
She had worked on it, and then...
The dude who did all the Underworld movies. I forgot the name. The guy who wrote all those. He worked on Guardians
and
as well.
And Whedon did a little bit, too.
Whedon did a bit.
And,
a bit
and I remember saying at the time, and Whedon... Joss Whedon did a little bit of it. And I think we said on that podcast, and you can go back and listen to it, there was a lot of Firefly in Guardians of the Galaxy, and I think that was Whedon.
Yeah.
Like, but Whedon was like... That's when he was the consultant between Avengers 1 and 2. Like, he kind of did...
Oh, he had his hand in.
He had like a pass on every script, uncredited.
But that Brandy, weaving in the Brandy lyrics to explain how, you know, this guy, great men are pulled away into history. It's like, the charm, you just charmed my panties off. I mean, that was so awesome. You know,
well, you were already hot for Kurt Russell.
Yeah,
let's be honest.
Pretty much.
You were 70%.
They set you up.
And so it makes his turn into a dick just so much more exquisite.
But it's like not a turn the way Jeff Bridges does. It's just when you put it all together, you go, And then he does the big dick move of trying to kill you.
It's all fun and games until he gives you brain cancer.
Right. Yeah. Oh my god!
But that was so ham-fisted the way they worked that in there, wasn't it? Like, would you? Why would you tell Peter you gave his mom the tumor?
I went at that moment. Well, I went through because he knew. I think he had him. Yeah. And he had won on every point of like, yeah, I did this shitty thing, but that's because I didn't want to do this shittier thing. And that's what an asshole always fucking tells
you. Thing, I think he's like a billion-year-old life form, so he's just probably a dick anyway. Yeah. You know what I mean?
And he's already like Peter's eyes are already like cosmic over.
Yeah.
You know, he's already Storm using her powers at that point.
Yeah.
So he's reeling him in at that point. Yeah. But what he doesn't realize is that's the mistake he makes, is admitting that he gave her the tumor.
It was just like when they first meet in that forest on that like crash land planet that they all landed on. It struck me as like they did like a scene together and he's like, all right, I'm going to go use the bathroom. And like he wanders off to take a leak. And it just seemed like, wow, Kurt Russell is playing such an older Star-Lord. It's like it was like the same guy, but like at two different points in his life.
It was perfect casting.
It was. Though the two of them just worked perfect as like father and son. It's like I would have bought the entire movie of them like palling around the universe, like doing swashbuckling.
I remember they announced Kurt Russell's casting the same week that they announced Lee Majors was going to play Ash's father in Ash vs. Evil Dead.
That was a great...
And I was like... And both of them, I was like, perfect father cast. Yeah. It was like the greatest week of father casting that would ever happen in Hollywood.
Yeah, I mean, all you're waiting now for is Chuck Norris to show up somewhere. You know?
That is who's dad.
Who's dad.
You know,
he'll be Steve Rogers'
dad. Hugh Jackman's dad.
But, and to the point of, like you say, the weaving the song. I mean, yeah, even more so than the last movie, the music was a character in this film.
Well,
I mean,
it carried the theme.
Yeah.
The first movie, it carried the tone and it set the tone. And this one continued that tone. They never moved out of the mid to late 70s. Right. They were late 70s without being disco. But this one, there were so many lyrical themes. Like the father and son during Yondu's funeral.
Yep.
Is like, there's a great Johnny Cash version of that. Mm-hmm. But I had never really appreciated the Cat Stevens version until I heard it.
And then, so you're sitting there and you're like, wow. I say James Gunn has become like Quentin Tarantino, archiving film music for his films and really making it a part of it. I mean, I didn't really appreciate it until Tarantino would do that with all his movies. You know, you can tell this is a reason why he uses this song in Pulp Fiction. That's why he uses this song in Jackie Brown. You know, the music serves, it's more than just being like something you hear in the background. It really drives a story. So I was there going, wow, James Gunn, all those years of just sitting in the basement, listening to the music, finally paying off.
Right,
you know? Yeah.
And James Gunn has a trajectory kind of the way Tarantino thinks he has a trajectory. Because they were both like nerdy movie kids. And the odd thing about Tarantino was he made one independent film which exploded. Because the normal trajectory would be you'd make six or seven of those things before the studio would ever look at you. And James Gunn did that. James Gunn wrote Romeo and Juliet and then made Slither. Which, if you've never seen Slither, it was on Netflix. But it's got Elizabeth Banks, Nathan Fillion, and Michael Rooker in a very disgusting horror movie. And if that doesn't make you want to watch it...
Yeah.
You don't like horror movies.
You're probably not a person who downloads this podcast.
Yeah.
It was on Netflix. I'm not sure if it's still there, but that's where I saw it.
Didn't he write a book, too? He wrote a book called The Toy Collector.
He did.
I think I have that book. It's like a cool, an homage to 80s toy stuff. So you can tell it's all through his DNA.
Yeah, there's a great article. I just read it this week. I think it's in Variety. It was in Variety or Rolling Stone. I think it was Variety that talked about, like, how this guy just kept like swinging for the fences, whatever opportunity he was given, and nothing was happening. And then like his biggest thing was he was married to Pam on The Office, and then they got divorced after he made Slither. So he's like this guy that never made it. And then it was Joss Whedon that got him the job because he had made this thing called The Specials and he had made Super, and Joss Whedon liked it. And he was like, look, this guy has a different take on superheroes. And he got James Gunn the meeting, and James Gunn wasn't going to take the meeting because apparently Ike Perlmutter had gave Marvel Studios this cheap ass office space all the way on the other side of LA. So he wasn't even going to make the drive because of the traffic. And then he was like, well, I guess I got no reason not to.
I'm glad they moved him away. Not to sidetrack, but just they got Ike Perlmutter completely separated from Kevin Feige.
Yeah, they needed to.
Wow. Yeah, but remember when, for the longest time in the beginning, everyone was crediting Joss Whedon for the Marvel Universe being what it was, and now that Joss is gone, I will admit, I was a little bit concerned when I heard the Russo brothers were going to be doing the next Avengers.
I think we all were.
Yeah.
And then, but now it's
not
like,
after I saw Winter Soldier.
Winter Soldier. Yeah, Jesus. And Civil War. So
yeah,
I'm
yeah
like,
they could juggle
yeah,
it.
Yeah, because yeah, they got it. Better. They can do it. Between Winter Soldier and Civil War.
Yeah, the thing that really blew my mind was the action in Winter Soldier was really great, but in Civil War it just seemed like they really ratcheted up, like the stairway fight with Winter Soldier and all those like German soldiers, and then like the airport scene, it's like these guys know how to do a big superhero fight. Well, they're gonna do the biggest.
And the thing about Civil War for me, Elliot, you said it on this podcast when we saw it, was that the last fight between Cap, Iron Man, and Winter Soldier, was every time the fight turns, you're rooting for the other guy.
You're rooting for the other guy.
Because
yeah.
It was, they were so well balanced. Like, all I felt in that fight was like, I wish you guys weren't fighting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I cared about, and you know, that was what, and I think I said it on the podcast when we did it, that was what Marvel told us the book was going to be.
Yeah.
And it clearly wasn't. It clearly was Cap is the good guy and Iron Man's the bad guy.
Right.
And the Russo brothers managed to make that happen in that movie. So I don't know what they're going to do with the 40 characters they have.
64 characters.
Yes. I'm thinking 40 just on the side of the superheroes.
Those movies, I bet you, I'm pretty sure the Infinity War is going to approach 3 hours in screen time.
It
has to.
Yeah. And they said they even was going to be Infinity War Part 1 and 2. Now they're saying it's going to be Infinity War and then the
and
fourth Avengers
name.
Is well,
they
unnamed.
And the name is going to spoil it, so they don't want
yeah.
to say
yeah.
it.
Yeah, that's what they said. Like, whatever happens in the end of it is going to become the title of the fourth one, so they won't tell
crazy.
Us what it is.
And just a couple days ago, Feige said that there is no more, there's nothing, the TV universe will cross over with the movie universe. It's
it
not,
will?
Where he had previously said they're never going to, or someone had said
they
they're never going to
cross
over.
They've kind of done it before. They've kind
so
of
you
done
could
it.
See
well,
a
they've done it one way. I mean, you've had Samuel L. Jackson and Jamie Alexander showing up on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
You've had them
the
mention
the show
movies,
reacts to the movies.
But the movies have never reacted to the shows. Right. In fact, I remember them saying that Agent Coulson would never appear in another Marvel movie again. Because to explain him being alive, you'd have to watch a season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and they did not think audiences were going to do that.
He's the one guy
you should quick line. Yeah,
I agree, but...
He can say, reports of my death have been greatly exaggerated.
Yeah,
boom.
And
there
that's
you
it.
Go.
But you know what?
Just do a little asterisk on the screen.
Nobody stays dead.
Season 2 of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or whatever.
Episode.
You know what I mean? Like the comics?
Yeah.
Because fuck all you movie people that don't read comic books.
But yeah, but at this point, who in this room does not want Avengers 5 to be the Avengers Defenders War?
Oh, I know, right? Well, that's everyone's like, what are they going to do?
The Defenders will get their asses
they would
not when you add Doctor Strange and Hulk.
Yeah. Oh my God, they could
you guys
switch
were just selling the HeroClix thing, right?
Yeah, that's they've got Avengers. The new HeroClix set is Avengers versus Defenders.
Yeah, you make a point.
But it's like you take Doctor Strange and Hulk, and God forbid if they have the rights to Silver Surfer, like the rumors say, game over.
And who does Spider-Man choose in that fight?
Right.
He chooses the fucking Defenders, because those guys are...
They're all his buddies.
They're New Yorkers.
They're his neighbors.
Yeah. You know, I'm just waiting. I'm just waiting for them to drop that they're getting the Fantastic Four back into the MCU.
Yeah, well, that's what I.
They'll get that way. But they'll get that before they ever get any X-Men.
But they don't. Here's the thing: they don't need X-Men. I mean,
they don't. X-Men can so
and we talk
stand
and we
talk
about this. My opinion of the Fantastic Four is they don't need the Fantastic Four, but they need Doctor Doom
and they need Galactus.
Yeah,
because you need
that was
that'll be your next big bad
after Thanos
and Silver Surfer.
Go from there.
You
that's
need,
a good point.
Yeah, because those are the characters that cross the Marvel Universe. And I would be very happy, and I love the Fantastic Four, but I would be very happy to not have another Fantastic Four movie, but to have a movie where, if they make the deal before End of Infinity War, where Thanos or Galactus
has got them
completely buffaloed, and then Tony's like, I know a guy, and then you see Reed Richards.
My only problem
with
that...
Oh my God!
My
see?
Only,
doesn't that work?
Hang yes. on, my only problem with that is he did that already with Spider-Man.
And it fucking worked!
Nah, but I think it'd just be redoing it. What I want to see if they...
No, Reed Richards is not Peter Parker!
No,
you do it different, because you go
see,
to that
you see Stark bringing Reed...
And there's machines!
Just jizz-gasm.
And Kirby crackle.
I'm not saying I don't want to see it, I'm just saying the universe
and
isn't that
kind. And the thing comes by and says something funny.
Yeah. Oh my God, my headphones are exploding right now.
I do.
Yeah. With your brain.
My brain. So, but
I'm going to need the compressor when I mix this.
Really? Brad Bird on a Fantastic Four movie.
Yeah.
I don't know why that hasn't happened yet.
Because Brad Because Brad Bird made one of the Mission Impossibles and did.
But he did
just like the, Andrew Stanton the prototype made
Fantastic Four.
Andrew Stanton made John Carter.
You know,
Andrew Stanton made John Carter. They're not going to make him let him make another live action movie.
But wait, that was John Carter was Andrew.
Andrew Stanton, who Andrew did Stanton, right? Finding Nemo. He was another big Pixar guy.
One of the best Pixar movies ever.
Yeah, but when he got a live action movie. Yeah,
John Carter was awesome. I love that movie.
And there were some guys, like, whenever I watched The Spirit, which I admit it was once.
But one more time than I've seen it.
But when you watch The Spirit, which Frank Miller directed on his own, not Robert Rodriguez did his book and said he was a director. Every shot in The Spirit is composed perfectly like a Frank Miller shot. And then they start moving and talking to each other and it all falls apart. Mm. Some directors can't work with actors. It's like Tim Burton. I love Tim Burton, but Tim Burton goes to the same guys because they know what he's saying when he comes over in between shots. Like, you know, in that other shot, maybe you should just, you know, not be that. You guys like Jack Nicholson and Michael Keaton and Johnny Depp go, sure. And then they do a great job.
They just do their own thing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You know, you're talking about George Lucas and Kevin Smith syndrome right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although I wouldn't put George Lucas and Kevin Smith in the same room at any other time.
I'd only do it to lob a grenade in there.
Other than I would put Kevin Smith in the audience of a Q&A with George Lucas. That's as close.
That guy's got to be killing himself. Like, if James Gunn was given this chance to do this, why can't anybody give me a chance? But he's
Kevin Smith?
Yeah.
He himself has admitted he can't do action.
Yeah.
Yeah, because like...
Because they have asked him, like, now that Ben Affleck is Batman, why can't he get you in the door? And he said just as much.
He can't do action.
Did you guys see Red State, though?
Oh, that is great.
It wasn't heavy action, but I was blown away by how good that was.
That was. But
I gave up after Chasing Amy. I was like, you're not going to give me anything I want ever again.
You know what? I agree to a point because there were some things that were really hit and miss. I mean, I'm like, I would go into the Jay and Silent Bob movies like an idiot. But yes, Red State is probably his best movie since Chasing Amy.
It's excellent.
It's a really you wouldn't know. It feels like a Steven Soderbergh film.
Yeah,
it feels like a Soderbergh movie, but it's Kevin Smith.
It's framed differently, and it's black and really white, dark.
So is it like when Raimi did A Simple Plan? It's that kind of thing.
It's kind of like that, where you only go, "Oh, wait a minute! That if I didn't know who was directing this, I'd be like, yeah." So I mean, you. It's a good point there. There is some action in Red State. At the end, though, it turns real Kevin Smith, like near the end.
Yeah, that's what happened in Chasing Amy.
Yeah, that's true. Now, that big
at
bit
the end
at
of
the
Chasing
end,
Amy, I was like, no, I'm done. Because I hadn't liked any of them up until that point. And then at the end of Chasing Amy, I was like, okay.
Yeah, he does kind of drop the ball there at the end.
Yeah. That's the last thing I will say. We are getting close to an hour, but the last thing I really wanted to mention about Guardians of the Galaxy is that the third act in this was so much better than the first film.
Oh, yeah. No, I agree.
I'm glad
I agree.
Someone else
that's where,
says that. Because
that's where it always loses me.
I feel the same way.
Friday, I thought it was going to be too crazy to go, so we went Saturday afternoon. So Friday night, we watched one again. And every single time I watch it, I love it, but when all those Green Lantern Nova Corps ships are surrounding the Ronin Hammer ship and it starts doing a Transformer thing, I'm always out of it. I'm always I'm completely out until they start dancing. And, like, in fact, Friday night, I completely missed the Yondu arrow scene. And I'm like, I love that scene because it happens in the middle of all that happening. The third act in this, when they're fighting in the core of Ego, I knew where everyone was. I knew what everyone wanted to do. And I was invested in everyone's story. And I was there the entire time.
Yeah, I checked out with the first one at the end with all the ships and the Dark Aster with the
yellow force field. Yeah.
Love everything about the first one, but that there was just I don't know if it even was
like
overwhelming, but
Ultron thing.
It's the same syndrome that all these action movies come. They just throw the kitchen sink at you, and it's like I don't feel connected to anything. I'm just kind of watching things happen. Whereas with this one, I was into it every second of the way.
It was a different ending from anything we'd seen before. I mean, Thor: The Dark World, Avengers, Guardians, everything, big machine. We need to stop it.
Yeah.
And what happens? For once, it was, it was the characters and Guardians dealing with the threat of Ego, but also what was going on with each other and relating with each other, not being able to find a fucking roll of tape, which was the the best gag on that bit.
And that's a scene.
Did you ask, what's her name? I did. She was next to him.
I knew you didn't ask. Yeah. I knew you didn't. And that was a scene that was in all the trailers.
Yeah.
And it was just as funny when it actually... And it was something that I assumed beginning of the movie, middle of the movie. It's a crucial point of the final plot.
Yeah.
And it works so well. I was like, I was in every line. And, you know, I had seen some of those jokes 17 times because it was every commercial, every trailer.
But I tell you, this movie, I already had some friends have told me, this movie reflected themselves back to them. So you're going to have a lot of folks saying this was very therapeutic for them, that this movie.
Because they had father issues.
But, yeah, they should have called this Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 Daddy Issues.
Well, I think it was even broader than that. I think more than father issues, it was about rejection. Because that's what Rocket's whole plot arc is. Rocket's arc is that he's with people that accept him, and he's got to sabotage it
somehow.
That's
why Yondu went after
Starhawk. Yeah,
he said Sylvester the same Stallone. Thing. He's like, why am I getting thrown out because you showed mercy to Peter Quill and all this shit, and all the Guardian or those guys betrayed him, you know?
Right. Well,
everybody went.
But he was also screwed on both sides of that, was because he was. I love that his backstory was completely revealed. That he was getting paid to bring these kids to Ego, which he was like, fine, he's their dad, fine. And then the rest of the Ravagers saw that as child trafficking and kicked him out. And then when he found out that Ego was killing all of them, he found that out right before he got Peter, and Peter, he did not deliver. Oh, and he paid off that guy was a jackass when he smashes into him with the ship. It was so well done, and they spent so much time on his funeral. And I'm like, this is a secondary character in both movies.
Yeah.
I'm fine with him not being in the third one, but they had done so much with him.
Yeah, it bothers me that he's not going to be in the third one. As soon as he started doing the thing with the arrow, though, with the new fin, I was like, they have to kill him. Because look how powerful he is. He murdered like 500 people in like 30 seconds.
Then they gave the fin to like James Gunn's brother.
Yeah.
Is that who that is?
Yeah, he's in every James Gunn movie.
Yeah.
He's the guy in the first one that goes, Captain's got to teach stuff.
Yeah. That guy's great.
Did anybody have an issue with the deaths, the number of deaths and the killing in this movie?
No.
No.
They're all like aliens, so I'm fine with murdering aliens.
The way he just kills those the dudes with the arrow is just awesome. There's a little moment where the lights go out, and it's just the arrow
That seemed like? It was like, oh, he saw Star Wars, and I was like, hang on, I need an extra minute on this scene.
He saw Star Wars, Disney said, hey, we're doing this thing in Star Wars.
Yeah.
Okay, three things. Hasselhoff.
Drax's
turds.
Yep.
Yeah.
And Groot's moist eyes.
Oh,
yeah. I'm just like, wow. There you go.
My son asked me who David Hasselhoff was.
That
because they mention him.
Yeah.
And then he pulls out the picture and he goes, "Who's that?" I'm like, "That's David Hasselhoff." And then finally, like, we're in the movie, we can't have a conversation about it. But he's like, then David Hasselhoff shows up and he's like, "Who's David Hasselhoff?" I'm like, "Do you remember the first SpongeBob movie?" Like, they have a fight on his butt.
Yeah.
That's the only reference.
Wow. That you can relate to a child.
Yeah.
I
walked into Menards the other day, the complete Knight Rider series, $30. Maybe we need to get that.
Well, that's just because discs are dead.
Or you could just show them that hamburger video.
Oh, the hamburger video is great.
Eating a hamburger, yeah.
I'm going to tell you.
That's the saddest thing I've ever seen.
And I will bring up.
You haven't seen enough sad stuff.
Probably not.
David Hasselhoff is in this short film. I forgot the name of it. It's about, it's a film. It's noted because an AI wrote it. It was an algorithm, wrote the screenplay for it. And no these way. Actors just act out the whole thing. And David Hasselhoff is one of the characters. I'm going to tell you, he was incredible in this film. Incredible.
How was the script?
I don't. It, you got to
writing it.
An AI wrote it. It was written. And when you read it,
freaking me out.
It's a little bit kind of out there.
Screenwriters are going to lose their jobs now.
Yeah, but it's about that very thing. It's about the very thing how a computer can write things and put screenwriters out of a job. And it had to be done like as an indie film because it is a little out there. Mm-hmm. But again, David Hasselhoff's in it. He has a bit role, and then he has a post-credit scene where he's just reading the same line over and over and over again. And that's when I went, holy crap, David Hasselhoff can act.
Really? No.
Yeah.
So, now he's in that pantheon of having played multiple Marvel characters.
Oh, because he's Nick
Fury. No, he's not playing a character. He's just playing himself. Yeah, he did play Nick Fury.
That's how you should show your kid that. Soundtrack. Show him the Nick Fury.
Yeah, we had Steve and I had a gigantic fight about Josh Brolin being two Marvel characters, but it was in a car, so we didn't record it.
Yeah.
It basically boiled down to Steven going, he can't be Cable, he's Thanos. I'm like, oh, so when he's a purple CG character, you're going to be like, that's Cable, I'm confused.
Yeah, I'm going to be lost.
Remember.
Did anyone see Jeff Goldblum? Although was in the credits?
I noted it just for you. I wanted to tell you, did you see
Jeff Goldblum? I heard that, but you were texting me. So I was answering your text during the credits.
Well, that's your fault. You shouldn't listen to me through text.
I got
to
turn off my phone because it almost ruined Logan. Well, we're over an hour. There's so much we could say about this movie, but let's just end it with, where would you rank this in the Marvel kind of pantheon of films? How high or how low does it rank for you guys?
Below Avengers, but above any other sequel, and above the first Guardians, and above Ant-Man. But I wouldn't put it above the first Avengers movie, I'd say.
Well, that's your favorite still, right?
Yeah, so far.
I'll break the movies into thirds. I think this is in the top third, but kind of towards the bottom. I'd put Civil War and Winter Soldier.
Yeah, I wouldn't say this is better than Civil War.
I love First Avenger, Captain America. It's just so sentimental for me. It's definitely in the top third.
I would put it in my top five had it been just 10 minutes shorter.
Thought it was too
10
long?
Minutes shorter.
Are you just thinking of running time, or was there a scene you wanted to lose?
There were a couple fight scenes. You could have just trimmed a few minutes here and there. Because when I'm starting to feel it, I'm sitting there, I'm like, okay, give me something to joke about. Give me a good punch. Because everything was setting up something. And I would forget the runtime when James Gunn would give me the payoff of that scene. But I'm like, you can get to those payoffs just a tad more efficiently. If you could. Again, little trims here and there. Wasn't anything I said, lose that. But beyond that, it was definitely better than the first Guardians. And I'm like with you, Steven. Although I think Civil War is the best Avengers movie.
I agree. It has the most Avengers in it. Yeah. There's 12 Avengers in that fucking movie.
So far.
It's amazing. I know.
Wait till Avengers 3.
The universe is being very kind to me.
I would say this is my favorite Marvel movie that does not have any borrowed interest in it. And I realize the only reason I would rank some higher is just because I loved those characters going in. Like when I saw that first Iron Man movie, I've been an Iron Man fan since the 80s. So there's so much equity in, like, oh my God, Iron Man's really happening.
And it's amazing.
And it's really good. And Civil War, I think, is... I like Civil War more than Avengers, because Avengers is really fun to see. Oh, all these guys are together and they can all exist in one movie. But Civil War is that plus this emotional
punch
depth that we don't have in any of the other movies. Like I said, Civil War is the movie that makes me laugh and cry the most out of all Marvel movies. Like when... The fight scene at the hangar when Ant-Man and Spider-Man are there, everything they say just brings me tears of joy. And then that final fight at the end with the three of them just makes me cry every single time, because I'm a man and those are the only ways that emotion can come is by seeing my 12-year-old heroes hurt each other.
Try to beat each other to death.
But as a film on its own, this works so well. And as I said, it's one of the few Marvel movies, and I think they're going to become further and far between as we move deeper into the Marvel Cinematic Universe, that just stands on its own. But if you want to stand on your own and tell us how you thought, please let me know on Twitter. I am at Not In My Book. That is the major Twitter feed of the podcast. Or you can go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/caffeinatedcomics, and comment on one of our news stories, or just leave us a comment on your own. Let us know what you thought. My favorite thing in the world is what you think we said that was wrong. I love to know that people are paying attention.
The right reading is the one I'm giving it at the moment.
At the moment. And Elliot, how do we find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Elliot Serrano, 2 L's, 2 T's, 2 R's. Also on Instagram, same handle. And yes, for those of you who follow my cat more than me, you can follow
a lot more of them.
Yeah, a lot more folks who love my cat, Sinbad the Survivor, at Sinbad the Survivor on Instagram. Join the thousands, and I do mean thousands of people who follow my famous cat.
Marco, how do we follow you?
I'm usually at the comic shop, so.
Yeah, come.
Which is that?
You can find him and me at 19 South LaGrange Road in LaGrange, Illinois.
Caffeinated Comics is a Not In My Book production.